Welcome to episode 20 of the Book Wars podcast. Yes, we are on episode 20 already. It is crazy. Woo! Thank you guys for listening to us so that we can continue to do this. We would probably do it anyway, even if you weren't listening. I'm Kristen. I'm here with Kate and Chris, who are giggling. We have had all manner of technical difficulties this evening. So if I sound a little bit irritated, that's why, because I have only had a tiny bit of wine so far tonight. And before we get to what we're drinking, hopefully you guys just heard some of our new theme music. It is a song called Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear, aka Chad Crouch, who lives in Portland, Oregon. I don't know him, even though he lives here, but he was gracious enough to let us use the track for free. So hopefully you guys like that. Let us know. But okay, Kate and Chris, what are you drinking now that I have done this completely forced introduction that doesn't show how angry I am?
I know, right? Like, Jesus.
You didn't even say what we're reading.
Anger leads to hate, Kristen.
We're reading Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad from the beginning to chapter 8. Who wrote it? Can someone help me? It's not in the outline.
It literally is in the outline right next to the title. It's written by Christy Golden, who is presumably less grumpy than Kristen right now.
Oh, sorry. I was getting Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad start chapter 8 from the title of the document.
I'm laughing so hard right now.
My bad. We are a disaster today.
I can't speak. I haven't been drunk yet, guys, which, by the way,
I mean, 20 episodes in, same as the first one.
That's right.
I know, right? Just like
better mics.
Yeah, I know, better mics.
Better mics, and we're recording things properly this time. So progress.
Hopefully.
Anyway, I am drinking green tea because I am fighting off a cold and would really love to not get a cold.
Yeah, don't get a cold.
That'll be good. Although if I do get one, at least I'll still have healthcare.
Theoretically, don't you dare say that.
No, right.
Right for this week, you mean?
Exactly.
Right, exactly. I right now am drinking some gin. It's Sunset Hills, which is a Virginia distillery. And it is very mild and very slammable, which is dangerous because I didn't get drunk enough last episode, for those of you who are listening to that, because I was literally like slurring at the end and screaming. Like, I really apologize.
Yeah, it was either like take out every single thing that me and Kate said at the end of the episode or just like leave it all in. So
you're obviously going to leave it all in.
Yeah,
so yeah, I was going to say, last week's episode ended up being a lot longer than I expected it to be.
Yeah, it was like over an hour.
Yeah, didn't feel like we talked for over an hour.
Well, you know, Chris, you talk really slowly when you're drunk because you don't actually know what you're saying.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Shut
Chris,
up.
Chris is fine. I edited out all of his silences. I am drinking 2015 Tempranillo from Coeur Cellars, which they are in Lisle, Washington, which is just up the gorge a bit from Portland, and it is delicious. I could wax poetic about the wines in the gorge for a while. They're much newer vines than a lot of the other winemaking in the gorge is relatively recent as far as winemaking is concerned. But they've got a couple of really nice wineries out there that are really coming up, so it's great. We're very excited about it because they grow different kinds of grapes than we do here in Oregon, so they can make different stuff. Yay, wine information.
And that's Kristen for Visit the Pacific Northwest.
Hey, I was going to say, though, Tempranillo from that far north is actually fascinating.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah, because it
Anyway, gets, this has been wine talk.
Yeah, it gets really fucking hot in the gorge in the summer. So hot. So it's pretty good for growing grapes. Okay, now that I barely remember.
Yeah, those of you who complained about beer talk, this is what you get instead.
This is what you get instead, wine talk.
You get a different alcohol talk about which we know even less.
Yep. Let's dive in to talk about Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad, because it's really fucking good so far. I'm really enjoying it. even though there are a lot of characters, and I'm getting confused because I'm bad with names.
Oh, poor Kristen. Yeah, before we dive in, I had one
thing. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Chris. Do your plugs.
I have plugs. No, but I wanted just, we're on episode 20 at this point. We're starting our fifth book, I think.
Yeah.
We're on our fifth book by now. We've recently picked up a lot of listeners, and so we just wanted to kind of restate our purpose and, like, what got us into podcasting. And so, like, as you've noticed, if you've listened to us, we're not really a review podcast. We don't review the books and talk about what's good or bad about them, but we more talk about how they contribute to the Star Wars universe as a whole. And so the themes and the specific characters, and basically, like, we all love Star Wars. We all love the movies and the TV shows, but how do the books and comic books and just other non-screen media kind of contribute to the overall film and, like, screen universe of Star Wars. So that's kind of our mission. If you've joined recently and are being like, I'm listening to this review and they never actually tell me how the book is, yes, that is correct, because we're not review podcasts. Although all the books we've read so far are great and you should read them.
Yes.
All right, lecture over. Let's dive in.
No, that was helpful. Where's the... Oh, yeah, here's the episode guide and planner, which is Chris's spreadsheet. I was going to count how many books we've done. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, this is our fifth book, plus comics.
Yay! For those of you also who are new, Chris has this batshit crazy multiple tab spreadsheet just to keep track of our scheduling and what we talk about in each episode and everything else, but it's, oh my god, he's looking at it right now. And it's
a work of genius is what it is.
It's an art form. It surely
is.
But I work with data. This is what I do.
I know. That's why I appreciate it, Chris. Okay, now that I have looked at the outline and it literally says reminder of who our podcast is, and I just blew right by that, let's talk about Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad. So the first thing on here is life under a totalitarian state, which I know we've definitely talked about before, but we're getting more Empire talk, right?
Oh, yes. So much Empire talk, obviously, since it is, once again, similar to Thrawn, which we read previously in episodes 10 through...
14?
14. Sure. This is from the point of view of the Empire, obviously, talking a little bit about... about one of the elite strike forces in the Empire, and of course one of the protagonists is Iden Versio, who we will be seeing in the Battlefront video game that's coming out in November, which we're all very excited about.
Get hyped. I'm bad at exactly, video games, but I'm gonna play it, I think.
Hell yeah.
Sorry, geeks, we can play online together and I won't yell at you and call you rude names.
Okay. That sounds great.
You sound thrilled.
Kristen, drink more. But the events of Inferno Squad take place before the video game and talk a little bit about Iden's rise through the Imperial ranks. And so when we're starting the book literally starts off with a bang because it's... I went there. Because Iden is at the Battle of Yavin, which of course is the destruction of the first Death Star, and she somehow survives and all this and that. So, Chris, this was your point. Say something.
It was my point. No, but it was really interesting to me how the first few chapters, when you're experiencing Iden's, you know, kind of jubilation that the rebellion is finally going to be defeated, and then her outrage over the destruction of the Death Star.
Oh, the irony.
I know, right? But you see this, like, really bizarre, and I don't mean that as, like, a reflection of the writing, but just, like, in a good way for the reader, a really bizarre view of how the citizens of the Empire see themselves. And this is kind of the first time we've gotten such a personal view of it. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Rae Sloane and how she was kind of the first really super military person that we got their point of view of all the books that we've read. But you kind of get the same thing out of Iden Versio, and Iden Versio is, if anything, even more of a true believer. And she was in her TIE fighter thinking about how all the rebels on Alderaan, you know, that Alderaan was just a complete hive of rebellion, and everyone there deserved to die because they got in the way of the glorious empire. And like, she is just totally bought into this totalitarian notion of the state can do no wrong. And that's something we didn't even get with like the new Imperials of Rake Sloane and Baron Dantha, who like had their eyes open and were kind of like, eh, that's fine. We'll make it work. Like, this is kind of like true believerism is something we haven't quite seen as much of in the books we've read so far.
Especially because we are getting this first from Aiden, whose dad we know is an admiral now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, and obviously, well, not obviously. Obviously, if you read the book, which I did, her dad, like, raised them essentially like how he would have like run a ship, it almost seemed like little to no affection, like physical affection or like affirmation or anything like that. So I think it's interesting to me that she is cool with the Empire, considering she had this kind of like what I would describe as traumatic childhood under this, you know, dad who's ruling with an iron fist.
I think that's a great comparison, that he really does run his family like he runs a ship. And I don't know how much of, if anything, of her mom we're going to get later in the book, but she obviously jumped that ship, as it were, because she couldn't fucking handle it because free spirit artist thing going on.
It's kind of interesting, though, because, Keeks, you say you don't know how she like manages the Empire, but like it almost makes more sense because like the only form of love she's ever known is this like kind of brutal rule by fear and discipline. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the Empire provides. So to like, not to psychoanalyze Aiden based on 8 chapters of reading, but like that is kind of the only, I mean, we don't know, again, we don't know about her relationship with her mother and how much of that exists, but like in terms of her father, that's like the only like real love that she's ever known.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely true.
It does seem, yeah, it does seem like, what's his name? Garrick
Versus.
Thanks, sorry. I can't talk today, which is a problem because I run a podcast. Oh God, what was I going to say? Yeah, it does seem like he has been the primary parental figure in Aiden's life. Gideon says she talks to her mom sometimes, but obviously she was principally raised by her dad. And I don't know, I think, you know, there's a lot of striving for approval in her. And I just, you know, Keeks, what you were saying about how you were not sure how she manages to still be with it, with the Empire, given mm-hmm. her upbringing. I mean, I feel like there are two kinds of people, essentially, that pop up under these situations. There are the people who really push back against it and rebel against it. And then there are people like Aiden. The Empire kind of represents safety for her because she talks a lot about how much she loves order and she loves having a routine and like having everything be structured. And I think that's just kind of, you know, for better or for worse, that's how her brain works, and whether or not that she's just naturally like that or it's a result of her upbringing, I do think that's significant in her person.
Yeah. Sorry, and also just to bring it back to like, no, you're good. Just to like bring it back to kind of the totalitarian state, we get a little bit more of a glimpse of life under the Empire just politically and just how much of everything the Empire controls. Because like, keep in mind, this book is happening basically at the height of Imperial power, right? Because obviously it's right after A New Hope, which was really the first big defeat. Like Scarif and then Yavin were the first two defeats that the Empire suffered, but basically the Empire had never been defeated until 2 weeks ago. Like, right. 2 weeks ago, or however long, I don't think they've ever specifically said, but a few days or a few weeks ago, they tested the Death Star, destroyed Jeddah, and looked like they had all the answers. And that was kind of like the pinnacle of Imperial power.
In a, quote, mining accident.
Yeah, I know, right?
Which is interesting that they won't even tell the internal Empire that. Very confused.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a need to know. It's such a top secret project, yeah. As we learned from Thrawn, that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, but, and you also have, like, Garrick talks about how they've cracked down on the remaining free holonet. I don't remember the term he uses, but basically the holonet channels, the websites. They've cracked down on, you know, all dissension. And you have when Del and Iden are in a shuttle together, like, or sorry, not Del, Gideon and Del are like hiding away in their shuttle a little later on.
Where they're in the box.
Yeah, where they're hiding in a box. Like Gideon makes like or Del makes a joke about the Emperor, and they laugh, and then they stop because even here you don't make a joke about the Empire. Like it's this totalitarian like thought control is something that we haven't really seen from other Imperial characters that we've read, I don't think. Because we've seen a lot of, like, going along with the Empire because you're corrupt or because you want to get ahead or, you know, or because you want to, even. But this kind of thought control is something that's a little bit new. And so it really just shows that we are at the peak of Imperial power and what it was like.
Right. I mean, it really shows how deep down, obviously, propaganda and self-policing have become, which is fascinating because we... The destruction of Alderaan is probably, literally the height of the Empire. I think we can call that the absolute pinnacle of it. Which is interesting because then we have... I'm trying to think. Well, we just read A New Dawn, and that's before... Obviously, that's before Alderaan is destroyed and the Star is completed. And we're not there yet in terms of people, like, self-policing their thoughts or anything, as we can see from Zaluna's surveillance... of everyone, like, you know, people are still running their mouths and they get disappeared and everyone knows what's happened to them, but it doesn't stop other people from getting disappeared. Now we've got people literally cracking down on themselves, and like you kind of get the sense that this is the time where people always talk about how in totalitarian states people will just rat on their neighbors or their family members or something like that, and I think that's where we are right now.
Yeah, you definitely have a very North Korea Fahrenheit 451 vibe happening here.
For sure. I mean, where you see that, I think, like, displayed almost, I don't want to say most, I don't know. I thought an interesting show example of that, there we go, that's a word. An interesting example of that was when they're talking about how, like, some Imperial officers sometimes go to that bar. What is the bar called?
The Singularity.
The Singularity, lol.
Such a good bar name.
Really is. How they go to the bar, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's like normal, even though they're not, like, not supposed to like gamble and stuff, probably. And she's like, oh, but don't worry, we're like, we have blackmail on them in case we ever need it. I'm like, oh, okay.
I busted out laughing at that bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I hope nobody has blackmail on me. I hope nobody has ever recorded anything I've ever done in a bar.
Right? No, totally. Anyway, I just thought that like, kind of setting of totalitarianism was interesting to keep in mind as we, like, dive into the characters. Because again, and as we'll talk about now, like, we have likable characters. Like, the protagonists of this story are Imperials. They are objectively, you know, quote-unquote, evil. They are on the bad side. And the Empire, as we're seeing it, is objectively evil because it is totalitarian and it, like, does not allow for free thought. And yet we have these good guys. And so it's just kind of an interesting perspective. And so when we're, like, talking about these good guys, like, we have, like, obviously the men and women of Inferno Squad. And, like, first of all, it's, like, notable because we have two men and two women. And it's, like, very... And, like, also both women are women of color.
Thank God.
Yeah, they are, right?
Yes, they are.
Is one of them blonde, though? Did I make that up?
No,
I don't think so.
I think so. Iden, of course, is being played in the video game by Kenyatta Gavankar, who is of South Asian descent. And then Sane Marana, who's the other woman on board, she seems to be of, like, Southeast Asian descent. Don't quote me on any of that shit, because I'm just going off book descriptions on my own. Probably horrible assumptions, but that's the vibe I've been getting.
Cool. Thank you for that information. I don't know why I got blonde. It's funny because I was picturing her as a woman of color, but blonde. And I was like, why is she? Why did I get blonde hair?
That exists.
I see where you're getting that, though, Keeks, because she is described as very, like, young and, like, not naive, because obviously she's, like, a literal genius, but she's described as, like, very young and uptight and, like, you get, like, a little bit of, like, a super smart, like, ear to please, like, puppy dog, like, Biddy vibe.
Yeah, Biddy. Thank you for bringing that word back.
A Okay, I didn't get that at all, but I'm fascinated.
Biddy?
No. I mean, like, that kind of vibe from her character. I didn't get that at all, but... I think it's because
I think I got it just in contrast to Aiden, because personality-wise, she's such a contrast, and so you kind of, like, to me at least, I kind of imagined, like, Aiden as, like, kind of the super smart, on her shit, but, like, more focused on knowing everything than, like, down to the last detail. Whereas, like, you kind of have this contrast with Sane of, like, again, I don't know that this is true, and we can actually come back to this point after we read a little more, but I kind of imagine her as, or not imagine because she was described, obviously, but, like, had a little bit of an image in my head of very kind of stuck up, like, obviously, like, it makes a point of, like, how pinpoint she is on her, like, pant creases and, like, how shined her shoes are.
I think because I read her as Asian and I'm Asian, I feel like I got that whole sense from her that she's like, oh God, I just keep thinking about all those like kids who go to school in China and they all have these uniforms, obviously. And it's like, make sure your uniform is pressed and you look your best and you do your best in school, or you're gonna go fucking kneel and rice when you get home, kind of thing, you know? So
this is true. There are dinner making noises behind me, by the way. I know you guys can hear them. I'm just need to address them. It's okay, Gwen, keep going. Thank you for making me food. I love you. It is dinner time. We always record around my dinner time, so it's an inevitability.
Good.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the kind of vibe I got. Like, and her being described as young also kind of like read to me as being like specifically Asian, just because there's that joke that Asians don't look different as they age, and that like we always look 10 years younger than we actually are, sort of thing. So I was just like, I see this. Anyway.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. Now I will address that. I don't know. I think it has something to do with her wearing a toga.
What?
She wears a toga, no?
She wears a dress.
No, hold on. I'm looking this up. Oh my God. What did I read?
yeah. Kirsten, did you read the book?
Yep. Sure did. No results for toga. Yeah, keep going. I'm gonna figure this out.
One thing that I found really interesting was kind of the point of view here, because we have like the point of view of four like kind of equally important people. Like, obviously we know from the promotion of the book that Aiden is the most important one, and that Aiden is the leader of Inferno Squad, who will be the main playable character in Star Wars Battlefront 2 that comes out in a couple months. But we kind of have this like squad vibe that we don't have in some other Star Wars books that we've read, and like you have these four equally valid points of view that we're getting the story from, and it's interesting to me. I don't know, like, I, because to me it feels like the rest of our books have had just one or two main characters. Like in Bloodline, it was very much Leia's story, and a little bit Casterfell, but very much Leia's story. And like you had, you know, other characters who were supporting. Rebel Rising obviously was Jyn's story. A New Dawn, it was written mostly like Kanan's story, although you also had Hera in there, but those were the main two. Like, Zelluna and Skelly were very much just kind of side characters.
That was definitely a Kanan book, yeah.
And so, I don't know. I'm not really sure why I noted it, but I feel like it's interesting that we have this kind of split four ways point of view thing going on here.
Right, I think it's significant because the other books that you're talking about that we've read, they've all had multiple points of view, but as you said, they focus on pretty much one main character, and the points of view of the supporting characters are kind of just to give us more information and more complete picture of what's going on in the plot, whereas when we're talking about Inferno Squad, there's pretty much any scene could be told from any of their points of view, and obviously, you would get different takes on it because they're all different people, but you would get the same basic information. I'm thinking specifically of the op in having to do with the singularity, because they could all, I mean, they're all in different places, but they could all see the same thing because they had that droid with them. You know, like, they could all, any one of them could have given us pretty much the same information.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. By the way, she wears a tunic. It was a piece of clothing with a T word.
That's Star Wars clothes. They all wear tunics.
They don't all wear tunics. They all wear uniforms, except for her.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, now we're splitting hairs on semantics. Sorry, anyway,
I just wanted to look it up because I felt like a crazy person, which I am, so that's fine. Yes, that was a great point, and now I'm going to use it as a segue and disagree with it because the mission that we are in the middle of right now, they kind of split up and they all have different things going on and like different, the quote-unquote brothers are like not bugged, right? Like they have no idea what's going on elsewhere.
Good point. You are correct.
And there are pirates.
And you're so happy. The pirate is hot.
Yeah, it's what I've understood. She's tall and she's hot and she likes whiskey.
Oh, and she's blue.
There it is.
And she's blue.
She's your type.
Add to my problematic list of blue bays. My list of problematic blue bays. There we go. Got it. She gets bumped up too because she's a pirate. Jumps a few folks.
It's true.
Amazing.
One other aspect that I kind of like talked about a little bit when we were talking about totalitarianism is the fact that these are all nice people, isn't the word, but these are all likable characters who we're supposed to like. Not so much Admiral Versio, but like Aiden and Gideon and Del and
especially Del
and Sane are all people who we're supposed to sympathize with. And again, it's just kind of like wild to get this dichotomy of, in the same book, we have on the one hand these likable characters, and on the other hand, they are fighting unabashedly for this completely totalitarian, like oppressive regime. And like, how are we supposed to feel about that? Because like, it's Star Wars. At the end of the day, like, you want the good guys to win. And these are like, it's not even like a point of view thing. Like, these people are objectively evil in their aims, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, literally the whole point of them is they're the fucking takedown squad, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Super, like, just get right in the middle and just...
Yeah, like, they're like the secret police. They're like...
Yes!
Planting, yeah. They're like taking away and or planting evidence on high-ranking officials who have pissed people off.
Yep. They are absolutely doing that. I had a point. It's gone now, but... I will try to make another one. what I was going to say was, Chris, have you read this book yet before?
No, I haven't. Yeah, it just came out in July, so I waited on this one.
I think it's interesting. I'm kind of happy that we like read the books in the order that we're reading them in, because now we've gotten like three distinct points of view of like life in the Empire, which we had like none of before. And I think that this is obviously like a really different point of view than we even got with the other two books, and this is giving, I mean, this is farther into the Empire's timeline, right? Like, notably, but we're also getting like a lot more high-ranking official stuff than we did before, so I think that's really interesting too, to see like how the cat and mouse game is played like closer to the top, because I think like I would assume even further down in the ranks, things have like tightened up a bit, as we talked about a little bit earlier, as far as like, you know, joking and being a fucking normal person with normal human emotions. I'm sure that's tightened up, but at the same time, it's like we are so close to the top now through this point of view that I think we're getting, that's even more amplified than it would be otherwise.
Right. I think it's the difference, really, between Eli Vanto's point of view in Thrawn, where he was just a field grunt, basically, and he just happened to accidentally fall into being attached with this really, really impressive person. And then, of course, in this book, what we're literally getting a fucking elite task force, you know? Like, they can't even tell other people what they're doing. They have to stun stormtroopers because they can't tell them that they're undercover, sort of thing. So I think that's right.
Yeah, it's just wild to see, and we talked about fascism in the Empire a little bit last week. It's interesting to see the other side of that coin, because, you know, the foot soldiers of these regimes are always true believers in a sense, and it's a view that we haven't really seen before. And so it's just fascinating to me. Like, you see all these, you know, people on the Death Star, people on the Devastator, the Darth Vader's Star Destroyer in A New Hope, and you really, just to flash forward to a book that's coming out next week, you get their point of view.
From a certain point of view.
I'm so fucking excited.
I know,
right?
Be the best.
Oh my god.
I just, like, at some point I would really love to compare, like, Eli is kind of just like this, Eli from Tim Zahn's Thrawn novel is just kind of this hapless, like, dude who just wants a job, like, versus these guys. Like, I just would like to, like, as we learn more about them, like, at some point I'd like to have a conversation where we just kind of talk about why they're so different.
But, yeah, that seems like a great conversation for the wrap-up after we found out a little bit more about Aiden and how she's going to grow closer and apart from her squadmates.
Yes.
For sure.
Speaking of Aiden, if I may segue, I just wanted to bring up, because as we read, some things to keep in the back of our minds, some ongoing Star Wars themes, motifs, characters, etc. Obviously, Star Wars is well known for being just an absolute hive of daddy issues, and we have another fine example of that here in Aiden's relationship with Garrick. And I'm really curious to see how much she grows in this novel and grows away from her father and becomes her own person, because although I think Garrick shows up, like, for Garrick, 2 seconds in one of the trailers for the Battlefront video game.
Yeah, Garrick, we know Garrick is in Battlefront 2 in some capacity, and Battlefront 2 starts at the Battle of Endor.
Right. Okay. So obviously he's, like, a significant part of her life, and he can't stop being a significant part of her life because of how high up he is in the chain of command. But I just kind of want to see how much or how little Aiden spreads her wings throughout the book. And the other constant in Star Wars is we just have to keep talking about Saw Gerrera and how huge he looms over the rebellion and their plans, or, you know, or how much they want to distance themselves from him and whatever else, since, of course, Inferno Squad is infiltrating what remains of the Partisans. So
there's a Steela mention.
Yes! Yes, there was.
I guess that's an Easter egg that I shouldn't have blurted out just now, but I don't care.
I mean, yeah, but it's fascinating to see how much Saw, who by all rights was kind of a minor character in the Clone Wars story, has really become so elevated within the Star Wars canon, because obviously you have him in Rogue One, but you don't really get a sense of how extensive his network is. And then you see him in Rebel Rising, you get a little bit more of a sense that he's, like, at least important. And it looks like in the upcoming season of Rebels on Disney XD, we're going to get a lot of, like, Saw as leadership in the Rebel Alliance, and, like, having a falling out, like, with Mon Mothma and with Bail, and, like, being an equal partner who then decides to leave. And so it's interesting to see kind of what is possible through these other media. Like, obviously, Rogue One was the start of all this, but, like, how his status has been so advanced by the books, by Rebel Rising, by Catalyst, by James Luceno, and here.
Yeah, right. I was about to say, this is really why you can't just watch the Star Wars movies anymore. You really have to get into everything to get the full story. And also, I mean, it's fun, so.
I mean, absolutely, like, good job, Disney. You did the thing. Lucasfilm, whatever. I think that's a good segue into our next point, which I'll let Kate plug because I'm white.
That is relevant.
No context awkward. Or off. Freudian slip. No context offered.
Yep.
No context awkward might not be incorrect also. So we're recording this on Tuesday the 26th, which is the same day that we dropped our episode on the Kanan comics. But we, at Book Wars Pod, got looped into an effort to raise awareness about representation or lack thereof in the Star Wars franchise and why it matters. And so, as of the date of this recording, we're still kind of in the planning stages. We're trying to do a hashtag campaign. We're trying to write blog posts about it, tweet threads, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not sure if by the time this episode drops, if we'll have already had our day dedicated to it or not, but, you know, either way, if it's already happened, I hope you joined in. If it hasn't happened yet, I hope you do join in once we figure out when it's happening. The hashtag is literally hashtag representation matters in Star Wars. And on our end, we are at this point trying to put together a post in our wheelhouse, but also related to this topic, about how there really need to be more crossovers from the non-movie media, so the novels, the cartoons, the video games, the comics, etc., into the films. Because while we obviously have a lot of crossover from the films into all the other media, there hasn't been a lot in the other direction, with Saw kind of being probably the most well-known and significant exception. So we want the blog post to specifically lift up characters of color that appear in the non-screen media. So, you know, for example, Ray Sloan or Dr. Aphra or Sanisteros. And also there are so many women of color who are supporting characters. You know, you have Lady Carice and
Grisano,
like all these characters, and we just wanna mention that we need diversity in all these areas, we need ladies in all these areas, and we'll be putting together an article about that, and hopefully it'll be appearing somewhere soon. Working on a pitch and all that stuff, but I'm sure you will find it on our Twitter, and I'm sure I'll retweet it like a million billion times because I never leave Twitter. And so, yeah. Hashtag representation in Star Wars.
Representation matters in Star Wars.
Representation matters in Star Wars. I can't do anything. but, yeah, we're working on it. It's happening. It's going to be awesome. Please join us.
Yeah, we're super excited because we talk a lot about the books, and we talk a lot in our previous episodes about diversity of characters, and we want to talk more about it, and we want to contribute positively to this fandom and this universe that we love so much, and there's an amazing opportunity. So thanks to everybody who's joining in this effort with us and who has spearheaded this effort and invited us to join it.
Yeah, who threw us into that canoe, Kate, that we can thank?
None other than longtime listener at Southern Cynic. We love you. Also, you were super cool.
This is just all part of our plan to Kickstarter a Ray Sloan movie.
Yes, right. It is.
All right.
It is.
Dad, do you want to bring us home?
Thank you so much for listening to episode 20 of the Book Wars podcast. Next episode, we're going to be obviously continuing with Inferno Squad. We're going to be reading chapters 9 through 19. We hope that you'll continue to read along with us. Also, extra special plug, on the day that you are listening to this, it'll be Tuesday, October 3rd, and that means that From a Certain Point of View will be on bookshelves. And for those who haven't been following and haven't been seeing the previews, this is basically a retelling of A New Hope from basically side characters and characters whose point of view we don't hear. And it's a series of 40 short stories. There's over 40 authors. It looks amazing. The advanced buzz on it is that it's absolutely incredible. I'm excited to read it. We're excited to read it on the pod. We're going to read it. We usually try and give books a few months to breathe and let people read them and buy them. This one we're going to actually...
Or borrow them from the library.
Or borrow them from the library, exactly. We're actually going to read this one pretty soon, I think, like mid-November. We're aiming to start reading it because we're just so excited and we can't wait. So go buy it. Put it on the bestseller list. Show Del Rey and Lucasfilm and everybody that this is a format that works and a format that people want to see more of.
Also, nothing screams happy holidays more than just like sobbing over a book, because all of the tweets I've been seeing from people who have gotten advanced reader copies is that they just like read the first five stories and they're like, I'm already wrecked, I need to go to bed.
I know, right?
Oh my god, so, I can't wait.
I know, it's gonna be great.
Me and Chris can't wait for how sad I'm gonna be.
And that is the Book Wars Pod. As a reminder, you can always find us on Twitter, on Tumblr, both at Book Wars Pod. Email us at bookwarspod@gmail.com. We love to get email and interact with folks on Twitter about the podcast and about Star Wars. Please do rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher. Kate drunkenly begged you all to rate us last week, and nobody did. And Drunk Kate is very sad about that.
I'm really sorry that I screamed at everybody. Like, I look at, like, we've gotten so many followers in the past few weeks, and it's just like, I just want you all to know, like new people, people who have been listening to us for a long time, and you know who you are because we shout you out all the time because we love you so much. Like, just thank you for being here with us. Like, yeah. Obviously we'd be doing this anyway because we're a bunch of nerds and this is fun for us, but it makes it better that we get to talk, like, be part of this community and talk to everybody and just, like, fucking, like, nerd cam about stupid theories together and whatnot, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well put. And so that's our show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Designs. For Kate and Kristen, I am Chris. Thank you for listening to the Book Wars podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
Chris, please don't drop your bread.
That'd be the most upsetting thing that's happened.
Yes, it would. You pick up hamster poop.